Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets. It's O-Behave with Arden Moore, the show that teaches you how to have harmony in the household with your pets. Join Arden as she travels coast to coast to help millions better understand why cats and dogs do what they do. Get the latest scoop on famous faces, their perfectly pampered pets, and who's walking who in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails, garner great pet tips, and have a doggone fur-flying fun time. So get ready for the pause and applause as we unleash your O-Behave host, America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore.
Hey, pet pals. Welcome to the O-Behave show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. She's back, and this time, she's going to give us the scoop on dealing with litter box issues. Our guest is the founder and president of All Cats All the Time. She's also one of the country's leading experts on cat behavior. Please welcome back the marvelous, meowvelous, Dr. Rachel Geller. Welcome, welcome, Dr. Rachel.
Thank you, Arden. That was quite an intro. I'll try to live up to all of those very high expectations that you...
Well, you are the cat's meow. You and I, a few weeks back, presented at the Feline Behavior Summit that was presented by Community Cats Central. And I was listening to your talk, and I'm like, I've been in the pet world a few decades, and I learned new things. So this episode is going to be devoted to litter box issues. Come on, everybody. You know what I'm talking about, right? So, I mean, I have two cats and three dogs. The dogs go outside, the cats go inside. But I wanted to ask you, you've been in the business a long time. What is it about litter box issues that seems to still need more and more good, solid information out there?
Yes, I think many people kind of look at the litter box and they think, you know, any old plastic box and any old litter will be just fine. And yeah, the truth of it is, you know, cats have very strong preferences, as do many humans. And
yeah, don't give me single ply. No, no.
Right. See where I'm going here, folks? So, you know, we all have our likes and our dislikes, and we all have our needs. And for cats, it's very important that the litter box meets her needs. It needs to meet her needs in terms of the litter, the safety, the security, the escape potential. And people always look at me a little crazy when I talk about escape potential, because right when we go to the bathroom, the last thing we're thinking about is, what if I need to escape? But to a cat, that ability to be able to escape should an invader or encroacher appear is very, very important, because cats are predators, but they're also prey. So they're always thinking about their safety. And in the litter box, your cat is in her most vulnerable position. So safety, escape potential, visual warning time, all of these elements become very important to your cat.
I'm glad you said that they're both prey and predator, because that's got to be a confusing mind. You're hunted and you're hunting, right?
Yes.
Are they pretty unique in the world as far as species? There's not a lot that share that duality, do they?
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. So they're always thinking about their needs to survive, which means eating the prey. But they also need to think in terms of survival by not becoming prey for another animal. And it's very interesting to me, because these are very strong, deep-rooted, instinctive behavior. So people will say to me, well, what's my cat afraid of? She's the only cat in the home. She's an indoor cat. You know, I don't understand why I need to be worried about potential opponents. And I always have to explain to people that these opponents can be real or imagined. It's in the cat's mind. We're not going to get it out of your cat's mind. So we need to accommodate appropriately.
If you could wave a feather wand across the world, it's a powerful feather wand, what would be two or three things you wish you could eliminate in the world of litter boxes for cats? Either something we humans do wrong or some kind of litter or litter box that you wish you could banish from the planet to make it a better life for cats?
I would love to banish covered litter boxes, and I'll give you my list and I'll explain why. So okay. Covered litter boxes is rising to the top of the list. The next thing I would like to ban is plastic liners. And the third thing I would like to ban is these custom-made cabinets or closets that you put the litter box into, because we humans don't want to have to see the litter box.
I don't have enough space in my house for that. What do you mean? That's new for me.
Oh, I have a lot of clients who have like these cabinets or areas or even like a nice closet that they put the litter box in because it's out of sight. So they think, you know, they don't want the litter box because they don't think that it really matches their decor. So they want it out of sight somewhere. So covered litter boxes, what's the problem here? Cats don't want privacy. We humans want privacy when we are in the bathroom, but our cats do not. They actually want the opposite. They want a clear visual field all the way around them. Again, they are prey as well as a predator. So they want a clear visual field around the litter box. They also want to know that they can escape if they need to, and they want to feel like they have a good view, clear sight lines, so they have plenty of warning time should they need to escape. The worst thing about a covered litter box is...
Well, there's a lot of worse things.
There are. And then I like do the worst of the worst. The worst thing about the covered box is that should a cat feel like there is some type of an invader or opponent, he knows that his only means of escape is right into that opponent's face. So that is such a scary proposition that it's going to be very hard to get that cat into the box.
I would poo-poo my cat pants in that moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's terrifying for a cat. So plastic liners.
Well, wait a minute. Before the hood, too, there's another one.
Okay.
The smell. What's going on? Because it's,
oh my
it's
goodness.
In there because some people don't clean the litter box every day. Shame on all of you.
Such a good question. Thank you for interjecting because I get very excited when I start talking about cat behavior and I can go off the rails. So covered litter boxes hold in the dampness. They hold in the wetness. They hold in the odors. So this is not going to be a very pleasing place for a cat to be in. And because the box is covered, we may not always notice the, and there's going to be some very technical terms I'm going to use here, people. They may not always notice the poops and the pee that are in that box because the box is covered.
Oh, and you know, that reminds me, maybe we could relate it. How many of you, raise a paw, have been to an outdoor event in a hot summer month and your only opportunity to use the bathroom is one of those porta potties and some big hairy trucker just came out of it? And I'm telling you, I can't even describe the odor. Is that a good analogy?
That is the best analogy. It's the
no
worst.
Offense to truckers. I love truckers, but I'm just saying.
I love truckers too. But you know, when they use that urinal or that porta potty before you go in there, just may not be the most pleasant place for me to now do my thing. And you know, I did have a time once at a golf tournament that I opted to go in the woods rather than use a porta potty. That was very, very stinky. So yeah, it holds in the odors for the cats. It hides what's causing the odor from the people. So not a very good thing.
All right. Feather wand, banish. Boom. Plastic liners. Go ahead.
Plastic liners, a human convenience that's easy for us, bad for the cats. Why? Well, first of all, urine can pool in those plastic liners.
Ooh.
And cats don't love that. Cats are fastidious creatures. They don't want to be standing in old urine when they make a new pee. The other thing
I don't
is
either.
I get it. Yeah, I wouldn't want to either. Totally understand. Yes, absolutely. So the other thing with the plastic is their claws can get stuck in that plastic, you know, when they're digging and they're burying, and that can hurt, right? And so now if you have a cat associating the litter box with pain on his paws, probably not going to venture into that box again. And plastic liners also can cause kind of like dunes and dips, you know, in the box. So they like their feet to feel pretty sturdy. So there's kind of like the unnatural hills and dales. The cat may not want to use, again, a box with a plastic liner.
All right. And then obviously somebody's been overdosing on HGTV a little bit and they're wanting to put the litter box in a closet out of sight, out of smell, but not happy for a cat.
No. So out of the way litter boxes, again, might seem like a good idea to us. We don't have to see it, but your cat does not want to go spelunking and on some journey to go find where his litter box is. He doesn't want to have to go on, you know, a harrowing journey to get to his box. He wants the box to be convenient.
Okay.
So if we put it in some out of the way place or in a cabinet or, I don't know, in an annex, all these kinds of places that, you know, we may like it, the cat will like it so much. Now, these cabinets and special furniture made to keep your litter box in so we don't see it. It looks like a pleasant piece of furniture in your home. Again, though, we get in that same problem with the covered box. No visual warning time, zero chance for escape potential, and there aren't any clear sight lines. So we get into that issue. But also, like I said, cats don't want to be that far away from where the action is, from where we all hang out, right? They don't, you know, I don't want to have to like set my GPS to go use the bathroom, and our cats are the same way.
That's a good one. Now, there are some new inroads in litter box designs and things like that. I wanted to get your take. One that I've seen has been, it's an open litter box, but it's sort of elevated to waist level and it's on wheels that you can lock in place. But the, I guess what's going behind it is that as sometimes people get older, it is harder to bend down and scoop out the litter box. And this is something that's off the floor, but it is uncovered. What's your take? I mean, it sounds like there's been some, at least some eyeballs on trying to make litter box for cats and for people in the 21st century a win-win.
Yeah, that's a good question. So that could, when you think about it, a lot of times if a cat does not use the box, where do they go? On the couch, on the bed, right? So they're seeking elevation. Because again, that meets all that criteria for a safe and secure litter box location. So I think if the box is elevated, that could be fine as long as there's like a landing area around the box.
Okay,
so the
good.
The cat's not going to want to jump up and land in the box. The cat will want to jump up and be able to land somewhere on the periphery of the box and then go in.
Yeah, they could have a little stairway or a little
two-stacker
that they can climb two-step to it or something.
Exactly,
right?
Or a table that's bigger than the box, something that the box can be on. That could be a really great idea for people who have mobility issues to be able to keep their cats in the home. And I think a lot of cats do okay with elevation. In fact, many times they prefer it. So if you give your cat some sort of, you know, opportunity to get used to this idea and ramp up a little bit, maybe use some treats and affection and petting or things that the cat likes when they get up there. That is an idea that could work.
Okay. Rachel, I'm not the only one that has questions about litter boxes. In fact, our producer, Mark Winter, has three kitty cats and he has a question for you.
Okay, bring it on.
All right.
We have three cats and Dennis is 17 and Molly is almost 10 and Charlotte is almost 10 and Charlotte will not use a litter in 10 years. She refuses to use a litter box. We have all kinds. We've got an enclosed one, but it's enclosed in Lucite so you can see out of it. We've got one of those ones that turns around that Dennis likes. And then we've got two open ones that are also automatic that will, you know, clean it after they leave, but they're open. She won't use anything. She'll just go wherever she's standing.
There are a lot of cats who won't use those automatic litter boxes for a few reasons. One is sometimes they start worrying before they're fully done or they're out. The other reason is that the interior tends to be smaller than most regular litter boxes. And some of them, you know, every once in a while, melt, like they start up just if you're walking by or a cat's walking by.
These don't do that. But we have a catio. And on the catio, we have like, you know, one of those troughs you mix cement in. It's like a big thing.
Yeah.
And so we've got, you know, that for a litter box. And a lot of times she's out on the patio by herself and there's no other cats around, nothing. And she still won't use it. She'll just go wherever she's standing. And she doesn't mind sitting in her pee. She just goes wherever she go. And I've been lucky we have, you know, the Bissell, you know, pet hair eraser, rug shampooer, yeah, which I end up using every day. But I would love for her to go in a litter box. She just refuses to do it.
Was there some medical?
We brought her in from outside when she was like 4 months old. And she's afraid of everything. I can't even play with a fishing pole toy with her because she runs away from it. She's afraid of everything. I think she's just afraid to go in the box. She's afraid of it.
She probably is afraid. The catio is probably too scary for her because there's like too many sights and sounds and smells. I would try, do you have the Container Store where you are?
Yeah.
Or Target?
Sure.
So you know those plastic storage bins that are made to go under the bed?
Yeah.
Toss the cover and try that as a litter box. They're big. The sides are low. The trouble with those cement mixers is they have really high sides. So once the cat is in there, they might be eye level with the side or feel too closed in. So try a very low-sided big litter box in an area where she has complete, you know, clear visual field. She can see all the way around her, but not on the catio and not like in a cabinet or in something. Try it. And also, like, if you want, we could do like a FaceTime. You could show me like places in your house, yeah, or set it up in an area that you think is good and then send me a picture of it. And I might say yay or nay. Or
what do you think, Mark? She's helping you out.
I appreciate it. And like our living room is an open concept and we have one of the open litter boxes in the hallway. And then we have the others in the living room. You know, they're in places that you can't really spot, but the cats know where they are. And the other two, no problem. And Charlotte sees them going, so she must know that's what she's supposed to do, but she just will not do it.
But your open ones are the automatic ones, right?
Yeah, but they've never turned on when you walk past them.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that they know it could happen, you know, like I said, these things can be real or imagined. So if she's heard another cat in there or no cats in there, but now it's doing its thing because there was a cat in there.
Right.
She may not be so like hip on jumping into that. So I would say, well, two things I'm going to say. This problem is not going to be solved overnight because it's been going on for 10 years, but I would say I think you're going to have your best luck of solving the problem with a big litter box that's as low-sided as possible.
Okay.
Lots of room to move around so she can still see out and over those sides. And maybe even put like a layer of cat attract on top of the litter.
Okay.
And keep me posted.
All right, we could try that. How will I tell her to use that? I mean, I could lift her up. If I lift her up and bring her over there, she's going to be afraid. She'll probably pee on me.
Yeah. No, don't do that. Don't do that. You can leave like maybe a trail of catnip or treats or, you know what? Cats like to inspect any new object. So she'll probably figure it out on her own.
Okay,
but
we'll give it a
shot. You can put enticing things like a little path on the way too.
Will it be a problem if the other cats use it first? Will she think that it's not hers, that it's theirs?
As long as you keep it clean, these are all cats that she's been living with for a long time.
Yeah,
just keep the box clean, scoop it. She's used to being immersed already in all of these cats.
I mean, it's ridiculous. She'll just pee and just sit where she's sitting and just stay. I said, you're not supposed to do this. Cats are supposed to be clean, and she doesn't care.
Yeah. Well,
she
does
care.
That's preferable to her than probably being scared to death. Yeah. So, you know, we all have our own, like, survival instincts and what will... I would never go bungee jumping, but people do, yeah, right? So, yeah.
Right.
I clearly have a stronger survival instinct than my husband because food drops off on the floor, I toss it. If something drops on the floor and it's his, it'll be like, oh, extra condiments, and he'll go ahead and eat it.
Oh, no, so, I would never do that.
Hey, we're speaking with Dr. Rachel Geller. She is a cat behavior expert. She has not one but two books we're going to talk about after the break. They are called, her newest book is called All Cats, All the Time. And the subtitle I love, More of What I Know About Cats. Her first book is still out there, and it is Saving the World One Cat at a Time. So everybody sit and purr. We'll be right back.
Time for a walk on the red carpet, of course. All Behave will be back in a flash right after these messages.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Hi, this is Jim Davis, the creator of Garfield, urging you to listen to the Oh Behave show with Arden Moore on Pet Life Radio.
Oh, yeah? We'll see about that.
We're back from the lot. Just checked the paper and we had a record showing at the box. The letterbox, that is. Now back to Oh Behave. Here's Arden.
Welcome back to the Oh Behave show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. I'm delighted to have on our show Dr. Rachel Geller. You know her. She's one of the leading experts on cat behavior, and this gal has the biggest heart in the planet. And you wear as many titles in the pet world as probably cats have lives. I'm laughing, but let's do it. I mean, she's a cat behavior and retention specialist. She's a humane education specialist. She is a fear-free shelter specialist. She is with the American Association of Feline Practitioners Cat-Friendly Veterinary Advocate Board. My favorite, though, pet chaplain. So we're going to get more into the litter in a minute, but people want to know who you are. And did you wake up when you were a little girl in diapers and say, one day I'm going to save cats?
I may have. You may not be that far off. Because I can even remember being a very young girl. I grew up in Maine, and we lived in this sort of a rural area. And I can remember, you know, going on walks around my neighborhood, and somehow I'd always seem to find an endless parade of cats who really needed me, and I had to take them home. So I really love cats from a young age, but I also learned a lot of responsibility and what goes along with taking care of an animal who's completely dependent on you. Right? They're vulnerable, dependent creatures, and they need us to take care of them once we bring them into our homes. So I learned a lot of lessons about responsibility, love, life, and loss. And I think that as I got older and got more and more involved in the cat world, not only, you know, am I helping people with behavior or working with shelters, but there were times, you know, I'm working with a cat and we find out that he has cancer and the cat's going to die. Or I'm working with a client and the cat's not getting any better and I recommend maybe a particular test or an exam and the client comes back to me and tells me that the cat has some type of terminal illness. So I decided that I didn't want to have to just end the relationship. I wanted other tools in my toolbox where I could shift and then be there as somebody understanding, empathetic, pastoral. So it was just kind of like the next, to me, logical step where I want to continue helping, but now my role changes.
I love that because it's the circle of life. So, you know, I think it's okay. I am so bonded to my two cats, Rusty and Casey. And I know my first cat as a kid was a Siamese cat named Corky who would swim in the lake with our dogs. That cat put a heart stamp in me forever. I will never forget that. So being a pet chaplain, is there something you can say to people right now dealing with that circle of life cycle?
Yeah, I would just say that I think one of the reasons that makes losing a pet so difficult, and particularly a cat, is many people will say, you can just get another cat. You know, when you lose a person, you lose a spouse or a parent, or, you know, you lose a person in general, we sort of have, the lack of a better term, a playbook. We know what to do. There are cards made for this. There's going to be visiting hours, condolence cards, services, times that we can go and visit, funerals. There are all of these very specific rituals that we know what to do that are sort of part of our society. But when it comes to a cat, people don't always know what to do.
So what can they do?
Yeah. There's a term for this. It's called disenfranchised grief. This is how the person feels. They're suffering a terrific loss, but they find many people don't understand the grief. So what can you do? I like to really invite people to create some sort of a shrine or a special area in the house where that they devote to the cat or any animal that they just lost. You know, maybe some pictures, maybe some tufts of hair, maybe an urn or something where you have the cat's ashes and there's an inscription on the urn, whatever you feel comfortable with. But I find that having that marker, much like we would with people who we lose, feels good to a person. And I just think also giving them permission to grieve and so that, and that they know there's no time limit. You know, I find it interesting that in the workforce, you get like, if you lose a parent or a spouse, you get 5 days. If you lose an aunt, you get 3 days. Like, we put a time limit on what we sort of think is the level of importance of who you lost. But in reality, there is no time limit. And in reality, you may never really get over it. I think, as you just so aptly described, that hole in your heart is still there. We just get better at tiptoeing around it rather than falling in.
If somebody wants to help somebody who lost a cat or a dog, what's maybe the best thing to say to them? And what's the worst thing to say to them?
Yeah, don't say, get another cat.
Okay.
You know, don't say, oh, time heals all wounds.
Okay.
You know, don't do anything to kind of diminish their grief, but do be there for them. Do ask them to tell you, I see that you're really sad. I'd like to hear more about your cat. Tell me some funny stories that your cat, you know, used to do. Tell me a funny memory that you have. Oh, I remember once you told me about your cat who likes to sleep with you in bed. Tell me more about that. I'd like to know. So that kind of stuff. You know, there's no right or wrong. I mean, unless you're really kind of not very sensitive. But in terms of trying to help, talking about the cat, getting the person to, you know, open up a little bit about what made their cat so special. People who, you know, lose someone, I mean, that's the whole purpose of when we have, you know, visiting hours at a funeral home, right? Or visiting hours in the person's home. And we talk about the person who we lost. And we should do the same thing, you know, with our cat companions.
I agree. Now, years ago, you did write a book called Saving the World, One Cat at a Time. It's still out there in print. You give away free copies, which I think is beautiful. So what inspired you and what's the focus of your latest book called All Cats, All the Time, subtitled More of What I Know About Cats? And congratulations on your new book.
Thank you. Well, when I wrote the first book, it wasn't something that I had planned. But there was an article about me as a cat whisperer in our local paper called the Boston Globe. And,
oh, yeah, just a little publication. Yeah.
It's a little old rag. And I got so many responses that the woman, the columnist who wrote the article, asked if I would ever consider writing a book. And I said, no. And she said, I really think you should. So I kind of called it an instructional memoir. It was a little bit about me. It was a little bit the path I took to get to be a cat behaviorist, a little bit about growing up, and then like an overview of some basic cat behaviors and how you can solve those behaviors. But as I kept going with this field and talking about my book, I came to realize that there were some limitations in that it was more of a broad overview and not like a owner's manual. So I went back to my editor and I said, I think I really need to do a book just on cat behavior, not that much about me, and have each chapter be about a certain cat behavior problem, why it happens, what we can do to solve it, and the steps to make that happen. So the new book is really like a very serious owner's manual, not like a lighthearted look at cats in general. And they're very specific solutions, programs, techniques for many behavior problems. And I have it all sorted out in a table of contents so people can read the whole book if they'd like to, but they can also find the chapter on the problem that they're having and then read about that.
How do they get their paws on this book and how do they find out more about you?
So my website is drrachelcatbehavior.com and you can absolutely buy the book from my website. You can also buy it through Amazon. And I donate 100% of the proceeds to animal welfare organizations. So either my nonprofit or from doing a training in a shelter, I might do a book signing after. I'll give 100% of the proceeds to that animal shelter. So not only will you learn a lot about cat behavior, but you'll be helping me continuing on my mission to make sure there's never a financial barrier preventing someone from keeping their cat.
So that means you have a new title. You're really? A feline philanthropist.
Ooh, I like it.
You can have it.
I'm going to steal that. Yes, but I will give you due credit.
No, that's okay. It popped in my brain. My brain is all over. But I do think you embody being a feline philanthropist. You better go get that URL now, girl. Wait till we finish the show.
Yes,
what
of
do you
course.
Think? Don't you think that's your role?
I like it. Yes.
Now, I know that you completed 11 Boston marathons.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, 26.2 times 11. I've done one half marathon.
Well, that's nothing to sneeze at. That's a big
That means I'm half as crazy as you. That's the joke. That I'm bummed. But you also are a major Red Sox fan. You and your hubby have been going to opening day for how many years?
I have not missed an opening day since 1985.
Oh my gosh. What happened? Now, what is it about the Red Sox?
Well, I grew up just loving baseball. For those of you of a certain age and you've lived in a certain area, you'll remember the 1967 Red Sox Dream Team. And I grew up in Maine, like I said. I remember listening to like every game on my little transistor radio because they weren't on TV. Because this was the olden days before streaming and cable. So I listened to all the games on the radio. And I don't know how I fell in love with baseball because neither of my parents were really big sports people, let alone baseball. But
your husband is, right? So you found a man that is sharing your passion.
He is. I had to convert him and get him to absolve allegiance to all New York teams because he is from Stamford, Connecticut. And that was part of our wedding vows. Just kidding. But he is now a diehard Boston fan. So I really just love this. You know what I really love about the sport of baseball? It's one of the few sports that's not governed by time.
Yes.
So, for example, like in basketball, sometimes the score just comes down to who can throw the last basket. And, you know, football is very heavily governed by time. Baseball, you get your three outs, no matter how long that takes.
And it's a team sport.
It's a team sport. There's a lot of strategy. And I just love the sport. I still have my Rico Petrocelli baseball glove that I got when I was young. And I think I enjoy the strategy. There's a little bit of serenity, I think, about a baseball game. And I'm just a very, very big Red Sox fan.
All right. If you could have some attribute that a cat has, what would it be? It could be physical or emotional or whatever. And why?
I think that I would love to have a cat's fur because it's so lovely and it's so luxurious. And that fur pretty much looks the same every day, as opposed to we people with sort of curly hair, which I really never know how it's going to look like day to day. You know, I might have a wing over here one day or something that's super curly hanging out over here another day, but cats have like the most beautiful fur. It always looks lovely no matter what. They don't have to style it or cut it.
You're the first guest that it's ever picked fur. I think that's brilliant. Yeah. Hey, you want to find out more about cat litter issues, cat behavior, and how to enhance your life with your feline friend, I urge you to go to drrachelcatbehavior.com. Get your paws on her new book, All Cats, All the Time. And I got to tell you, I think you are the cat's meow because you're shouting out what needs to be said to represent cats. So Miss Feline Philanthropist, Cat Meow. You got a lot of titles now.
Thank you, Arden. I always love being on your show. You make learning fun and interesting in everything that you do. So thank you.
You're welcome. And I also want to give a shout out to my producer. He's from New York. Sorry. Mark Winter. He is the executive producer of Pet Life Radio. And we are the longest running pet podcast on the planet on the air since 2007. That's a long time, folks. I also urge you to check out ardenmoore.com, and my passion is saving lives for pets. Please check out Pet First Aid for You. We teach it in person, interactive Zoom, and now two self-paced courses, including one exclusively on cat first aid and CPR. What do you think of that, Dr. Rachel?
Sounds wonderful, because we never know when a crisis or emergency may occur. So, yes, paws up. Everybody take that course if you have a cat.
All right. Until next time, this is your flea-free host, Arden Moore, delivering just two words to all you 2, 3, and 4 leggers out there. Oh, behave.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's Oh, Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. All Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.